The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's just approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 13th of February, 2026. And you're very welcome along to the Greg Hughes Show. We're here with you between now and 11 o'clock. We've got lots coming up, including in the next hour or over the course of this hour, should I say, the Friday panel, where we'll have a conversation, perhaps a debate about some of the big stories affecting us this week, today, developments overnight, etc. Just to remind you that we want you involved in that conversation. 086 6025 000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 6025 000, or give us a call on 074 9125 000 and feel free to email comments@highlandradio.com.
The Friday panel on The Greg Hughes Show.
Let's say good morning to Professor Pat O'Connor, Professor of Sociology and Social Policy Emeritus at University of Limerick. Good morning to you, Pat.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners.
It's great to see you again. How are you keeping?
Oh, good, good. Drenched like everywhere else.
Yeah, except here in the Northwest. We're actually dry today, believe it or not. Councillor Dennis McGee, 100% redress, and councillor in the Glenties Municipal District. Are you there, Dennis?
Yes, I am here, Greg, but you cannot see me because having technical difficulties with my camera here.
Factors. Technical difficulties. Well, let's go to Christy Galligan, retired Garda Sergeant. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. Listen, it's good to have you on the programme with us. Right, just some news, of course, that we got last evening. And that is that typically Ireland has been drawn Israel in the Nations League. Ireland's draw against Israel in the UEFA Nations League was described last night as an absolute nightmare from both a security and political perspective. The draw for the European soccer competition made in Brussels yesterday evening will see the boys in green play the Israelis at home in Dublin in the autumn. The away ties expected to take place in another European country given the volatile situation in the Middle East following their genocide in Gaza. Of course, we should put into context that a few months ago, the FAI voted for UEFA to ban Israel. I'll start with you. Christy, let me go to you. What do you think?
Yeah, this is a very difficult question. I suppose it's very difficult to answer it, but we are under obligation. But I think, you know, we have a situation where we're sending teams to America at the present for the World Cup. And I have heard no team or nobody coming out against it. Well, there are people who come out against it, but the support, I'm thinking to myself, you know, what is happening in America? Should we say turn around and say the same thing in America as we're going to say about Israel? I mean, what happened in Gaza and West Bank is abhorrent, and we're like, no right-minded person would agree with anything that's happening. But are we going to hold sports people responsible for what governments are going to do? Is this what we're looking at? And the issue that we have in relation to the Israeli team, yes, security will be a big bugbear for a lot of people, and for especially for the security services. How do you maintain security? There will be flashpoints, people will be protesting, and how do we prevent something from occurring? I don't know the answer to that.
Do you anticipate that the... I don't know how political they are. Do you anticipate that the GRA will have something to say about this in the future?
I'd say they will. I mean, we're talking about the concerns of frontline service members, Gardaí. You know, you have to have ambulance services and crews on board as well, possibly the army as well. You know, you have to have all those backups in place if we are going to be playing something that a team that will cause controversy, whether we like it or not. It's going to cause controversy, and you will see protests, and how we manage that will be up to the Garda authorities and our security analysts at and our government. But I think at this present moment in time, is it a good thing to do? I think we need to think about it again. Look, we had Infantino handing a peace prize to Mr. President Trump, the man who stopped 8 wars not so long back. And I was actually, I actually thought it was appalling and it was demeaning the way this was done. And if a head of the FIFA could do something like that, I'm not surprised what UEFA or FIFA can do going forward.
Do you believe we should fulfil the fixtures or not?
there's an obligation on us to do so. Personally, I don't think we should, but there is an obligation on us to do so. So, you know, we need to look at it. We need to get all of the people involved, either in UEFA and FIFA and the boards and teams and supporters all over the globe, to agree on a commonality where teams coming from countries like Israel, that don't meet the criteria, where we talk about human rights, or, you know, this is human rights we're talking about here. Should we allow them?
But where does that end when you do that? And I look forward to bringing the other guests in as well. But where do you do that? I mean, there are perhaps people listening to us that very much feel that, you know, Ukraine was invaded and is under the cosh of the Russians, but also that Ukraine, in the years in advance of that, you know, they themselves were firing rockets into the Donbass region. You know, many thousands of people killed. But because we've chosen the Russian side, it's Russia bad, Ukraine good. I'm not going to make the same argument with the Palestinians and Israel, because that is so brutally one-sided in terms of what we've seen. But, you know, like when you start politicising sport, it doesn't actually become about what's right or wrong. It becomes about what side you're on.
Yeah, but we've already politicised it. You only had to see Infantino presenting a peace prize to Donald Trump in front of everybody. You know, and I find that disgusting,
okay.
Actually.
Okay, we'll come back to you. Pat O'Connor.
Well, now, I suppose I want to make about 4 points. Firstly, as I understand it, now I'm not a football person, but I was listening to Daniel Lambert, the commercial officer with Bohemians, who was saying that, in fact, you cannot have teams, according to UEFA's own statute book, you cannot have teams playing on occupied lands. So that Israel is in breach of UEFA's own statute book. And hence, UEFA should take action, as they did with Russia, by the way.
But just on that point, Pat, I think the game away, Israel's home game, is not in Israel, and it's been put down to security reasons. Does that address that point you're making? No.
No, that's not the point. I mean, I can come to the fourth point, or if you wish, quickly.
No, I'll go through them all. Take your time, Pat. Go through them all. Take your time.
Well, so as I understand it from people who know their football, UEFA's own statute rules are being breached by Israel. And this was the basis on which the vote, the FAI vote, was taken, which was carried by 93%. Secondly, so I think it's important to put on a marker for UEFA. Secondly, I cannot accept that anyone hasn't realised that genocide is going on in Gaza. Mm-hmm. The ministers of the Israeli government themselves have come out and made it clear that their purpose is the annihilation of the Palestinian people. Now, I mean, that to me is like, it's a very, very, very serious fundamental issue. Even in terms of footballers, there's been about 400 Palestinian footballers have been murdered by Israel. So there is putting down a marker. This has been the issue. The UN bodies, Medicine Sans Frontières, Amnesty International have all come out on the same hymn sheet. The only one who has asserted at moments that it's not genocide is Israel, but its own ministers have come out and said that. The third point is that, like, we have to go back to kind of basics. Why do you encourage children to play football? And it seems to me that a really important reason is that children learn that rules matter. And in a way, like, if children see that basically the heroes that they look up to are ending up doing genocide washing, you know, what kind of a message is that to give them? And fourthly, the whole, as has been adverted, like, to if The match goes ahead, played in Ireland. There will be huge security and financial implications. Is this how we want to spend our taxpayers' money? Mm. By the way, when we have a situation where the GRA are saying they there may be a blue flu for Paddy's Day, but even more importantly, like the whole question as to, we could even, I know, I mean, politically, this is very
but
tricky.
But Pat, can I ask
but
you?
But we could refuse to host it. Apparently, Belgium has said that they will not host a match.
But Pat, are we not being
Belgium?
Sort of, and unfortunately you see an awful lot of this, especially for people that fancy going to America, all of a sudden their campaigning can go on pause. Are we not being a bit a la carte in relation to this? You know, say, for instance, America, there's images of bombs being signed over there, the bombs, the very bombs that were sent to Israel to facilitate this genocide. The international community stood by and allowed Israel to starve these people to death, yes, bomb them to death. So, you know, I mean, we can pull Israel out as obviously it was through their name. But at what point do you sort of say, well, this daisy chains and there's other countries equally responsible that facilitated that genocide. So where does it end?
Well, I think where it starts, like, we have actually got a moral choice here, and dodging it by saying, you know, oh, well, everywhere else is X, Y and Z. The fact is we have been drawn against Israel and we have to decide. And I suppose it's really important to remember the Dunstore situation, the stance they took. Women who could ill afford it took a stand against South African apartheid. And we have all seen they were on the right side of history. Mm. Now it's time for the men to decide, are they going to be on the right side of history or not?
Dennis McGee, Councillor Dennis McGee, what's your view?
Yeah, so listen, first of all, FAI should never have been put in this position. This should have been sorted out when Israel violated UEFA's own rules when they played in the occupied territories. You know, they flagrantly do whatever they want. There's not a chance in hell that, like, for me as a soccer supporter, could go to that match. And I would say a lot of other people would be the same. You just cannot condone the violence that they have put against the Palestinian people. Now, notwithstanding whatever happened with Hamas, nobody can justify that either. But this collective punishment, there has to be, we have to stand up. There has to be moral values here, like, you know. So I would be absolutely, totally against playing Israel. And I'd go as far as saying that Israel shouldn't even be in the competition, like, because they're not a regular state, like.
Okay, and just to run through what the international community think. These are the bodies and experts that have deemed it to be genocide. I can't go through them all. The Independent International Commission of Inquiry in the Occupied Palestine Territory, UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, the UN Special Committee to Investigate Israel's Israeli Practices, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, Medicines Sans Frontières, the International Federation for Human Rights, Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention, the International Association of Genocide Scholars, Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitors. Those are just some of the groups and organizations that have deemed what Israel has been undertaking as genocide. So it's not a debate as to whether or not it's genocide or not. I mean, that is what has been generally accepted, broadly speaking. But what do we do, Dennis? You might not go to the game, right? But the country is still seen to host Israel or travel to Israel. Like, can we boycott those fixtures and hope maybe others in the group do? And therefore, I don't know if that means Israel qualify or not. But if every country in that group refuses to play Israel, either home or away, I don't know what happens in that situation, but that's really the only feasible option.
Yeah, well, listen, it's a failure on UEFA, first of all, not to enforce their own laws, right? So Ireland, FAI, this country should never have been in this situation. So for me, yeah, don't play them, boycott them, don't travel, don't entertain them. For me, they're not a regular state. And listen, we can talk about America. America has been complicit in everything that Israel has done, like, along with the UK and a lot of European countries.
But
so we have to take a stand. We just cannot allow this here to keep going. The ceasefire has been going on for how long? And there's been hundreds and hundreds of people still killed. Like, so, like, from a moral point of view, we have to take a stand.
Right. What should we, I mean, obviously then we have to look at the state, right? The leaders of that state, the government. Christy, what should the government do?
I think the government needs to take a stance, and they have taken a stance when we have, like, look at, there's been a hue and cry about the human rights in relation to the and the slaughter of people in Gaza. At the end of the day, it's human rights versus a sporting organization. Which side do you want to be on? The human rights side or on a sporting organization side? That's the question we're asking people. Do you want to support a game of football or do you want to support people's human rights? I know what one I stand for, and that is human rights. There's no argument here. I think the government and I think FAI and others should say, no, we're not playing this game until things are corrected. What's happening in Gaza is appalling. What's happening in Ukraine is appalling. It's happening everywhere is appalling. But I think when you have, people are afraid, and you know what they're afraid of? They're afraid of Mr. Trump in the White House in America, who supports Netanyahu and Israel and everything he does. And that's what they're afraid of.
Okay, Pat
and
O'Connor.
I think people need to stand up. Yeah. People need to stand up, take a stance and say, no, it's not good enough. There are people dying in Gaza every day. So much for Trump ending eight wars. Eight wars, be damned. He didn't stop anything. Actually, he's more likely to start more than he is to end up.
Well, we don't want to get into the Trump conversation, but I understand why you brought him in. Pat, what should the state, what should the government do in this regard, or what can they do?
Well, the government, I'm afraid, is busy book passing, right? The government has said it's up to the sporting organisations. So that is going to be what the government is going to do. So effectively, Helgrid Hallgrimsson, sorry, I'm not pronouncing his name correctly, he is saying that it's up to players, that he and players can decide whether or not they play or not. I think this is really unfair and hard on the players, but in a way, like, the state is passing the buck. The football, the FAI, having taken the vote, has passed the buck. It said it's going ahead. So I'm sorry, the last line of resistance is the individual players.
Okay.
The Friday panel on The Greg Hughes Show.
We have Councillor Dennis McGee, Professor Pat O'Connor and Christy Galligan. With the removal of the midday flight and the loss of same-day return capability, the new PSO contract has been described as a medical lifeline cut for cancer patients travelling to Dublin. Given that over 15,000 people signed a petition against these changes, how can the Department of Transport, I ask, justify a service that no longer facilitates practical same-day medical appointments? Dennis McGee, Councillor Dennis McGee, I'll start with you on this one, if that's all right.
Yeah, well, even let's understand why we have a PSO system in place. Like, you know, the whole premise behind a PSO is like to ensure access for people that would otherwise have to travel, do you know what I mean, through the second substandard road system that we have, the absence of a rail service, do you know what I mean? So, and the absence of actual cancer care within the county. So it just baffles me completely, like, you know, where we had a perfectly good system and it was working and everybody was happy with. Then you enter, you put it out to tender again and you end up with something that's worse. Like, it just, something doesn't seem right within the tendering process. I think they actually messed it up. Like, it should state in the contract that, like, you know, if they had done their due diligence and sat down with all the stakeholders, whoever that may be, like Donegal Airport, the Cancer Flight Committee, anybody, you know, how do you end up with a service that's worse?
Well, why was the tender not updated to ensure the continuance of the service that the people of the county have become accustomed to? So Emerald Airlines they tendered for the service, and they're matching that tender, whether we like it or not. They're meeting the tender requirements. So why was that tender at some point not updated to ensure that it reflected how that route was operated and its need?
Yeah, but what was in the tender, Greg? Like,
a morning flight,
I mean?
And an evening flight, Sinead.
So, like, how was it, like, you know, that the previous contract worked fine? Like,
because that's what the tenderer opted to do, as far as I can find out. It's a very murky area. The tenderer, the previous tenderer, decided that this was the service that they were going to provide. But then they've changed their mind, but the tender didn't specify an earlier return flight or the departing flight to be in the morning from Donegal Airport. And here we are now. And unfortunately, yeah, unfortunately, it seems in the Dáil, this is being described as just a service. You've got your service. What's wrong? There's a flight in the morning. There's a flight in the evening. There seems to be a lack of understanding as to what the function of this service, or at least a significant part of it, actually is.
Well, it is a lifeline service, Greg. It is a fact. I was at the protest outside the airport where 200 regular people turned up, like, just like that there on a Saturday evening. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't think they get it. I don't think they get it. If you have stage 4 cancer and you're dependent on this midday flight to be able to go up and come back in the same day, like, they definitely do not get it.
Okay.
I think they just put a tender out there, and then somebody accepts the tender. The other thing is, you know, the reason for a PSO is to subsidise. You know, that the government will fill in the gaps. Like, so we're not filling in the gaps. You know, how much? What is the value of a patient? Like, what metrics do we use?
But the
here?
Problem is, Dennis, and I'm kind of adding to it, the money's being spent anyway. The 18 million is going to be spent if these flights are empty for the term of the contract. So that this money that could be there to facilitate cancer treatment is being spent in any case. The problem is because of the timings of the flight, it doesn't function as that. And just to expand it, as I go to Professor Pat O'Connor, we obviously are focusing on the lifeline element of it, but in terms of it meeting the needs of business people flying into the region, people getting off international flights to travel into the region, apparently the flights are useless for that as well. But obviously it's understandable much of the focus is on health. Professor?
Well, I have the feeling there's there's an elephant in the room that isn't being identified. Somebody has got an angle, and it's not clear to me who. Now, it does seem that the fact that the airline will not stop overnight in Donegal, that seems to be significant, right? The fact that the point that Greg has made, that the terms of reference in the contract did not include that there was to be a flight returning, going and returning from Donegal daily. That seems to me extraordinary. And so somebody had an interest in avoiding including that. It looks to me like the flight is facilitating, but I mean, I'm obviously not entirely, I don't know this neck of the woods on the ground, but it looks like it's facilitating flights from day trips from Dublin to Donegal.
But if that were the case, though, Pat, just because obviously, as you say, you would have to be in Dublin Airport at 4:30 in the morning. Okay,
then it doesn't look like it's even facilitating.
No,
them.
No, that's the thing. So you'd have to be in the airport at 4:30, 5:00, according to the rules and regs of airlines, to make that flight up to Donegal.
The surprising thing, I suppose, for me is how the Minister, Dara O'Brien, is standing over this. Like, you could say this was basically a civil servant who just thought one flight, just any time, doesn't matter, talk to no one, didn't include this element in the terms of reference and the contract. Emerald Air, the airlines thought, great, this suits us fine.
I'd like a politician to ask as well, and maybe this is nonsense. Do Emerald Airlines make more money out of that 17 million with an empty plane? Because if you're not carrying 50 passengers or 60 passengers like they often do, does it suit that airline to fly an empty plane and collect 18 million euro of taxpayers' money? Because I heard Ryanair arguing about not putting internet on their planes because of a tiny little aerial on the top of the plane would make it impractical to do so. So, or is it really in Emirates Airlines' interest to have empty planes flying back and forwards, maybe one member of staff using less fuel and getting more bang for that 18 million or 17 million than they would if they put them on with people on them?
Very good question. But I suppose, I mean, what is also true is that I think that providing public money to basically fund a service which is not meeting the public's needs just makes no sense.
All right, Christy Galligan, come in here now and I'll come back to the others.
We have to understand what the PSO is for. It's where airlines serve low population areas, not profitable for carriers without subsidies. And we know that Emerald Airlines are not, they're a business at number one. And basically, I think it doesn't meet the needs of the passengers, this new tender. And it favours the incumbent profitability of Emerald Airlines itself. And we saw passenger increases since the pandemic in Donegal Airport, went up from 36,000, nearly 37,000 to 51,000. And we know from that the government invested there on 4th of December, 700,000 into Donegal Airport for security and fire services and everything else. And what it has done, and we know this from figures being released, that it has contributed to 86 million in income and 39 in GVAs. And GVAs, as you know, are this gross value added. It's a metric that measures income coming into an area. I think that's what we have to look at. And what they didn't look at, the tender that was denied, and this is not primarily just for people who have cancer treatments, but the fact that you're asking people who are sick, who have cancer treatments, to avail of a very early start in the morning or a very late one at night time, just shows you how far detached the Department of Transport and Minister Ryan is from reality here in Donegal. We have a infrastructural deficit, and we've had an infrastructural deficit here in Donegal for decades, for years. No investment whatsoever. They're talking about a Metrolink going to Derry instead of going to Sligo, but we're talking about infrastructural deficit. And the reason for the PSO in the first place was to help places like Donegal, who are left out when it comes to investment in infrastructure, unlike Dublin and the satellite counties, are totally left out of that infrastructure and the development of our infrastructure within Donegal. And that's the problem here. They don't look upon Donegal as part of the Republic, as I used to say. We are the forgotten Republic up here, as far as I'm concerned. But the problem here is PSOs were put in there for a reason. And they were to subsidise areas like Donegal and help them and manage their economies. It's for connectivity, it's for employment, and it's for the local economy. And they've forgotten that.
Yeah, and rough estimates that I can get from some websites, just as I was listening to you, empty flights would save you about 30 grand a year. 30 grand a week, wow. Sorry. 30 grand a week between airport charges. That doesn't include apparently Dublin Airport charge you by the weight of the plane rather than the amount of people on it. So, in other words, there's money to be saved with an empty plane. And I'm not saying there's anything to that, but our first topic was the fact that, and it's a nightmare, Ireland being drawn to play Israel in the UEFA Nations League, home and away games. Israel are not part of Europe. How are they allowed to play European football competitions and the Eurovision? Well, that's a wider point, I suppose. Just get on with the game. After all, it's sport, full stop. Another, as long as Ireland kicks them out of the World Cup, I'll be happy. A fundamental question, if Israel wasn't Jewish, would we be so vocal about the PLO, Hamas, Palestinians, 2,000 years of hatred? It doesn't even come into any part of my head whether someone is Jewish, Christian, or whatever. I have it is literally the actions of people. Under what religious banner it is to me is completely irrelevant. Good morning, Greg. Ireland should do what was decided for the Eurovision Song Contest. That means pulling out altogether. What about the British? The troubles were the same as we were treated like dogs in our own country. Why is war politics wrapped around sport? Another, didn't the Biden admin facilitate Israeli attacks on Gaza, or is this Christie a short selective memory? On the issue of the airport, has the Board of Management at the Donegal Airport questions to answer? Well, they are taking a legal challenge in relation to this. Greg, re-Donegal flights. The boyos in Dublin think Donegal is out behind Tory Island. They don't care. Do you think this would happen in Kerry? The Healy Rays would bulldoze the gates of the Dáil. Let's take on the government first. Micheál Martin sitting on his hands as always. That comes in a lot, Dennis. Dennis McGee, Councillor Dennis McGee. That this something like this wouldn't happen in Kerry. And objectively, I mean, that's a fair statement, is it?
Absolutely, it's a fair statement, because the Healy Rays are looking after the county. And that's the bottom line. We have two government TDs here, and it just shows you what the rest of... Like, if they're going up and they're advocating for this here... Listen, this just didn't happen in February. The tender process and all this kind of stuff. Surely to God, they must have been talking to the transport minister and the officials and saying, listen, well, you would hope that they would be. Mm. Not in the couple of days leading up when the news came out. Like.
Well, and just in case you don't, and in case the listeners don't, you know how the airport found out of the flight schedule? Two Emerald Airline staff were heard overheard chatting. And that's how the airport, as far as I can understand, that's how the airport found out the new schedule. I mean,
well, that just shows you, you know, that the contempt that they hold this county in. Greg, it doesn't matter what it is, like, and people always be giving out to me, you know, you're always complaining. You know, but I wish we had some good news. It doesn't matter what it is, like. Let it be defective concrete block. Let it be the hospital, our roads, Iske Éireann. The government just simply don't care about this county.
Mm, you know, well, they would argue that there's a lot of money has come into the county, a lot of improvements, you know.
They would, of course they would argue that, yeah. Like. So why are we complaining, like? You know, okay. Why is the A&E, why is the roads not up to standard? Why are we the only county in Ireland that have a PSO system in place? Like,
Pat O'Connor, a caller says the big gain for Emerald Airline is that they can use the aircraft on another run during the day now if they wished. They've effectively getting a longer day from the same plane instead of sitting in Carrickfinn from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. It's now earning from 6:30 a.m. until 10 p.m. and also extra revenue covering different flights during the midday time. And the thing that troubles me is that we in this conversation and our very intelligent listeners are asking very logical questions about the use of taxpayers' money and the return for that 17 million. It shouldn't be up to us sitting here having this conversation and our listeners getting their phones out at home to ask very basic questions and point out very fundamental points that seem to indicate that this is really very advantageous for Emerald Airlines, very disadvantageous for the people of County Donegal.
I do think you should be asking some very straight questions of your TDs for a start. It's worth thinking about what would happen in Kerry if there was a similar suggestion. The Healy Rays would have been out last October, basically saying, floating kites, saying, if this were to happen, what would the consequence be? Right? Rather than sitting, basically saying obediently quiet until it all breaks and now the contract has been agreed and nothing can be done. So where I think you should very much start is asking very tough questions of your TDs and why they haven't been as proactive.
Because, Pat, they have been working tirelessly behind the scenes, that this was thrust upon them, that they're in conversation with the minister responsible, that they are in conversation with Taoiseach, that they're in his office banging at the door saying this is not enough. I'm just telling you, I've already done this. Those are the responses.
But my response would be, Greg, they've been too compliant. It's worth looking at the Airbnb, the exemption of towns, which happen to be the same size as Killarney, from the Airbnb regulations and the way that was handled. So, I mean, in a way, talking behind closed doors sometimes is effective, but it is very clear in a lot of situations it is not effective.
All right. Do you have so, a...
And actually, continuing after the event... is annoying, and it won't change it. As I have understood it, Darragh O'Brien is saying it'll be reviewed basically, but not for 3 months.
But that
and
doesn't
really,
but
review, put my money on
but
it.
Review, the review might actually show that there's no justification for 18 million euro of state funding going towards it because the lack of use of it. A review does not capture a person who's 68 saying, I'm not going to Dublin for treatment any longer because I can't put up with that bus journey. I'm going to sit at home and chance my luck and see how long I live. It's not going to catch the young 11-year-old who we were speaking to yesterday who has to go up and down from Dublin and the nightmare that it would cause him and his family who have been so reliant on this service. That review is inhumane, and I don't mean it's, I mean it's inhumane even if the word it means like this, it will not factor in at all. You'll just say, well, there's less people want to go to Donegal, so we don't need that flight.
Exactly.
Christy?
I think you're right there, because, you know, 3 months to a cancer patient is a long time when they're seeking treatment. Imagine you're a cancer patient and you're seeking to get treatment and you want to get to Dublin. And I have spoken to a number of cancer patients who've gone to Galway and used the bus that we have here, a charitable bus service, and they go down to Galway for treatment and they come back and they're very sick. And you can imagine the distress that is now caused for people who are on cancer treatment that have to wait for a 3 month review. You may not survive in that 3 months. So we have 51,000, nearly 52,000 people who used it up to the end of November last year in totality in the service from Donegal Airport. Are we going to deny them that service? That's a very important afternoon service, which could see the numbers lowering. It'll affect our tourism. It'll affect our employment. You know, it affects all of the things I've mentioned before. And I don't think sometimes I wonder, Dublin 4, are they totally disconnected from the rest of the country sometimes when this decision-making is there? Because I'm aware, or maybe I'm wrong, Greg, that in October that the board, the Donegal board and the airport board themselves have been in contact with the department in relation to this tender. And they were waiting for them to come back on it. So they have been in discussion for some time in relation to this tender. But here we have a tender now that cuts a vast majority and people who are very sick out of that process that may have to travel now by bus to Dublin.
A caller posed this question for our panel, actually. With the tourism season approaching, how can the Friday panel justify Donegal's sustainable tourism image, though it's not their responsibility to do so, when we've got zero dog fouling fines being issued? Thank God we've got over that awful crisis of dogs pooing all over the place, because there's not been one enforcement for those that might have been found responsible. We also have, this caller says, overflowing bottle banks and a high level of roadside litter. Are we just heading into another messy season where locals deal with the mess while the council issues its press releases? Pat O'Connor.
Well, I mean, I'm afraid Donegal County Council isn't looking very impressive. Sorry, Dennis. I mean, it is apparently one of 14 local authorities who has issued no dog fouling licences. I found that there were only 3 fixed penalty notices for illegal transport of waste. Clearly, somebody is not doing their job. Sorry.
Is that a bit harsh, Dennis?
That's lovely. What do you call that lady again?
Professor Pat O'Connor.
All right, Professor. Well, listen, here, when it comes to the dog fouling thing, I think, in fairness to the Donegal... listen, I'm not here to advocate for the executive of Donegal County Council. My job is to hold the council to account. And I've been advocating and looking for staff every other day and night. We have a serious lack of staff, right? That's the first thing. And you can, I've seen somebody comparing like how much fines that we can give out with parking on footpaths comparing to dog fouling. Doug, I'll ask you, Professor, how do you police it?
Can I answer? Can I answer that, if that's all right? And the professor is well capable to answer. You go where there is hot spots of dog fouling, and you take an hour of the morning, 1 hour in your 40-hour week, 52 weeks of the year, and you walk casually and see when the dog does a poo, you approach its owner and you hand out a fine. That's called enforcement.
Well, that sounds brilliant, doesn't it? Like,
you it know, does. But-
Yeah, it does sound, but it's very simplistic, like, to say it like that there.
So you mean to tell me the simple solution sounds simplistic? It is the simple solution.
No, hold on, Greg, let me, don't be like the professor here now, like, you know, so.
I don't know why you're taking Pat's comment so personally. She simply said that, you know.
No, listen. So you sit, but I think we have three dog wardens, right, throughout the whole county.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit for an hour and you watch and you don't observe anything. Okay, you observe something.
Well,
then.
we might as well get rid of the Ghost Safe fans as well, because that's what they're doing.
Well, hold on. Let me finish this before we go on to something else. So you approach that person, and that person then verbally and almost physically abuses that dog warden.
Hold on a second. I'm trying to enforce a bylaw here. Stay there a second whilst I phone Angada Shiakana here, because you're not complying with a directive here. The exact same way you issue a ticket if someone parks in a disabled bay or if someone parks on. You enforce the law, Dennis. You're not wiggling out of this one. You enforce
the law.
No.
You try your best to enforce the law. But the reality is very different.
We haven't managed to do this in 3 or 4 years. You know, we'd get one, wouldn't we?
If we get one, does that cure the problem? No. You might have 98% of people compliant, but the 2% is always going to make the 98%
right,
look
okay.
Bad.
That's 100% right. Listen, I'm not having a go at you. It's not the biggest issue in the world, though. It is quite important. Christy, what do you do?
Well, I know they've expanded that to three wardens to deal with this issue and a few other issues as well. But, you know, and I compliment the local community groups who look after all of the cleaning up around in local areas to keep our areas very clean. A fair juice to them to do that. I know where he is in Letterkenny because I walk the streets of Letterkenny most days when I'm out for a walk, and I see the same areas where dog fouling occurs.
Can they be caught, or do we have phantom poopers? Can they be caught? Or maybe they poo in the darkness of night.
Sadly, there are people who go out with their dogs every day.
Why are you laughing? It's a serious
question. Some people refuse to clean up after their dogs, and that's a reality. And unfortunately, you have people who are disabled or maybe blind, who are walking these footpaths, who step into dog fouling, or children for that matter.
And
before
I go, Pat O'Connor, give me a formal apology to Donegal County Council, or you're never coming on the Friday panel again.
Well, it looks, I'm afraid, to me, like as if you go along and if you are unfortunate enough, inverted commas, to notice that there a dog has pooped, it's maybe the reason you don't enforce it is because it's a neighbour, it's a colleague, it's a friend, it's your mother's sister's cousin. No, I'm sorry, I agree with Greg on this. It has to be enforced. And in a way, if you start actually enforcing it, it ceases to be necessary because people aren't that keen on shelling out a whole load of money.
But in fairness,
one enforcement saves a lot of problems.
But otherwise,
why have dog wardens?
Yeah, and in fairness, Dennis, like, you know, we know for a fact dogs will be running amok on blue flag bleaches throughout the summer. You know, I think the public do expect, as difficult as it can be, some level of being seen to be enforced.
That's a big thing. Yeah, absolutely. And that will probably deter people from, you know, not cleaning up after their dogs. Like, and we're going to have three wardens now. But listen, it's a big county. Listen, it's not like...
You need someone knocking around Swan Park, you know, just for... one or two hours a month, or someone knocking around Drumbo Woods for 1 or 2 hours a month. We're not, we don't expect to see an army of dog wardens. But listen, thank you so much, Dennis. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and we look forward to chatting again. Thank you. Look after yourself. And have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Professor Pat O'Connor, I haven't sacked you. I'm going to beg you to come back on again. I look forward to seeing you really soon. All right, Pat.
Thank you, Greg.
Have a lovely weekend.
No offence to Donegal County Council,
okay.
But sometimes you have to call it. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And lastly but not least, Chrissy Allen, look after yourself. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, Greg.
All right.
The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. And another set of excellent figures published for Highland Radio yesterday. It's a three-monthly rolling survey of listenership. And again, we have come out on top. We've got the most remarkable loyal listeners that tune in the morning and stay tuned all day. The latest figures covered January to December last year. I don't have them directly in front of me, but the station continues to be very popular, and we really do appreciate all of your support. And also, too, the last 3 months of last year was the old incarnation of the 9 till noon show, and it held steady too over the year, up here, down there, all within the margin of error, which is good. So it means we were consistent over the year. So thanks very much for all your loyal support, and we move forward, we go on. Right, so each and every Friday we release a sister podcast to this programme. It's the Greg Hughes podcast, and coming up on the podcast at 11 o'clock we take on an unflinching look at the addiction crisis gripping our local communities here in the Northwest. We'll be joined by Bernadette McConnell, a mother and community carer who spent nearly a decade watching her daughter Bailey battle an addiction to cocaine and counterfeit prescription drugs. Bernadette speaks very candidly about the silent toll on parents, the sleepless nights, the agonising thin line between support and enabling, and the trauma of having to plan a child's funeral in her head while they're still alive. Crucially, we discuss the systemic failures facing families today, the closed doors at the ED, the six-week waiting list for mental health support, and why the current help often isn't there when it's needed most. It's a story of trauma and heartbreak, but ultimately one of hope, as Bailey marks 14 months in recovery. And here's just a sample of the podcast, which you can listen to from 11 o'clock.
I lost the daughter that I raised. I lost Bailey Boo. And I would have no qualms in saying that I hate it, absolutely hate it, the addictions, the addict, because they were destroying my wee girl that I gave birth to. And a lot of parents will relate to that, because it took me a long time to figure that out. Greg, you know that there were two different people here we're chatting about. And she was killing my wee Bailey Boo. And anybody that's going to kill your wee child, Greg, you're going to hit them.
Yeah.
You're going to hit them.
I mean, you never give up on your children, right? But
no,
did there come a point whereby you say, I'm going to have to be the best mum I can to this person, even almost to a point where you're enabling the situation, not in any sort of in a manner that you were doing it intentionally at the time, but on reflection?
All parents enable. All parents of anybody with addictions will enable, because when she's out partying and gone for days on end, and I'm checking to see when she was last active on her socials to see if she's still alive, I have a lovely warm bed for her to come back to. I have fresh clothes washed and dried for her. I have a lovely warm meal on the table for her. That's all enabling her. I paid off a huge debt to the drug, for drugs as well, which is enabling her. I didn't let her be responsible for her own actions, Greg. I enabled her so much over the years that on Christmas Day, when I sat here on my own at the table, I broke down and cried after I'd pulled her out of a flat the night before, kicked the door down to get her, bring her home to keep her safe. But that was me looking after myself the way that I would be all right, knowing where she was on Christmas Day. But I was enabling her because I was bringing her home to a lovely, warm environment. I didn't let her lie in the circumstances that she created herself.
And it's a long chat, me and Bernadette. And the full interview drops at 11 o'clock on our website, highlandradio.com, on Spotify and on iTunes. And it populates as part of this program as well. So if you subscribe to iTunes and if you subscribe to us on Spotify, you get those episodes delivered to you directly into your account. And if you have any feedback or want to share your own experiences, you can contact the production team, which is carolineorr@gmail.com. Now, on to some of your comments. I think we should be grateful to Emerald Airlines. They were the only ones looking for the tender, and I'd say the government had no choice but to accept it on their grounds. Another, Donegal Airport Management must have known when the contract was up for renewal. That was the time to get the work done and getting the new contract sorted. Why the silence that allowed the new contract be negotiated before anyone was informed? I also note that the contract is signed by a civil servant and not the minister. Civil servants don't have the ears of the people and they don't care. In fairness, you know, the airport facilitates the flight. They're facilitators, and they were very vocal when they found out the nature of the new contract, and they even tried to get the signing of that contract deferred while they explored legal avenues to challenge the framing of the new contract. So the airport are on your side, trust me. Another OK protest at Dublin Airport required, and if the government TDs do not attend, we know that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael care feck all, they say, about Donegal. Protest to highlight defective concrete, hospital, roads, railway, etc. Let me see. On the issue of dog fouling, I have three dogs and I was praised many times for lifting the dog poo. I lived in England for many years and you always lifted the poo. You can get free dog poo bags in the council office. There's no excuse. Another, if they had the same people giving the fines for dog fouling as they did for parking, I'm sure that the issue would be solved. In my opinion, the role of traffic wardens and dog wardens should be combined. There's no enforcement of double yellow lines or no parking or disabled parking here in the Dunfanaghy area. Next time you see a dog fouling, you may take a video and send it on to the dog warden. Back to the airline, a big gain for... Oh, I actually read that one. And hi, Greg, we need a cute TD to fight for us. It wouldn't happen down in Kerry. Another, the tender went out, only one airline came in, no one else applied. And that's a big factor on the decision. They know... they knew there was no other competition for the route. But they, can I say in fairness to Emerald Airlines, that they have met the terms of the tender. A early morning flight and an evening flight. They have met the terms of that tender. Okay, so just to be clear on that. Hope protests over soccer will have more conviction than the Gales for Gaza against Allianz. Ex-players and managers protesting before games, but some end up attending the games as pundits and promoted by reporting and writing about it like the movie Protest in Father Ted. Attendances are way up. Some players refuse interviews with sponsors' name in the background, but wear AIG on their chest, a company associated with huge investment in Israel. It's all very confusing. According to car sales statistics, says the listener, in the whole of the Republic of Ireland, County Donegal car drivers have bought the most motor cars new. Car sales, including having no railways, must be the reason Donegal would have been better off in the UK jurisdiction. We got the worst deal of all in the partition of Ulster. Another caller says it's not the dog warden who enforces dog fouling, it's the litter warden. Why do these people not know this? Do your research. Dog fouling, listen, no one's talking about individuals personally. If dog wardens who might be out and about don't have that responsibility, widen their mandate. Litter wardens obviously are very busy. You know, maybe the roles need to be amalgamated. I don't know. This is not about individuals. There are people who work and they do as much as they can within the role that they're given. OK, so it is not a criticism of any individuals. It's about the structure and how we enforce things. I mean, I think a lot of people might go, well, why wouldn't a dog warden be responsible for that as well? Now, they're on about the welfare of animals, don't get me wrong, but why couldn't that scope be widened? They're probably very busy. They're under-resourced. So, you know, I think the potential plot hole here is not that people don't necessarily know who does what job. I think a lot of people would be surprised to find out, well, oh, is that not their job? And why is it not their job? As I say, it's very important to point out, if it wasn't absolutely clear, this isn't about people, individuals going on in and working hard in the roles that they're given. It's about the roles and the resources. And I hope that came across. I think that was pretty clear there. Right, now, World Radio Day is celebrated every February 13th. It is a day to thank broadcasters for the news they deliver, the voices they amplify, and the stories they share. I think we get thanked every... I wouldn't subscribe to that. I've been asked to read it out. I think we get thanked on a Friday. Anyway, i.e., you know, it's not all about patting ourselves on the back. But anyway, today artificial intelligence opens a new chapter, not just for innovation, but for deepening the bond with the listeners when used ethically and responsibly to support professional judgment, creativity and public service values. AI can become an ally in strengthening audio trust. Technology alone does not build trust. Radio broadcasters do. Okay. Dear all, we recently underwent a review of our SNA allocation here at St. Oran's National School in Cock Hill, which was conducted by, I won't mention their name just at the time. It was their responsibility to gather the evidence to support the fact that we have a current allocation of 4 SNAs and to report their finding to the NCSE review team. The person attended St. Oran's National School on Friday, 5th of December, and a follow-up meeting on Thursday, the 11th of December. On both occasions, they interviewed myself, the SNAs, and observed children in their classroom settings. Afterwards, they went through their relevant files and reports to each of the NCSE Level 3 School Support Plus pupils, and on it goes. Anyway, the news received yesterday via an email from the NCSE review team is that we are to be reduced from an allocation of 4 SNAs to 2.5 SNAs at a loss to our school of 1.5 SNAs. The reductions that has had a massive impact on not only the pupils, but also the parents and the wider community. We have a number of guests to discuss this. I'll go first, actually, to Councillor Ali Farron, because you had wind of this. You were contacted by the principal. What is going on here, Ali, as far as you can determine?
It's fairly simple. Unfortunately, Greg, can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
They're getting their numbers cut. And unfortunately, I'm hearing from other sources too, it's happening to them. And I'm told from other principals that I've been chatting to, they're very, very worried that it's very, very likely that it will happen to them as well. So again, this is an issue. We have another fight on our hands for something that you would expect at this stage to be a basic necessity. Like SNAs, they're not a luxury. They're needed. They've been fought for, you know, and I'm gathering from bits and pieces, you know, they're coming into a school and they're looking at the SNAs, and there's ones that are probably very, very, they're very, very much needed. And then there's ones that kind of maybe look after 2 or 3 children. They wouldn't have as high a needs. And as far as I can gather, the ones that are secondary needs, they're the ones that are being cut at the moment. So it's a bit like, you know, allowing one car on the road and then taking off the diesel cars. Or that may be a bad example, but, you know, they're cherry picking one group and cutting out the other group.
But they're not listening, clearly not listening to parents. But I think particularly those in the school, they have a really good insight into this. And in this letter, it's pointed out that the principal went through the relevant files and reports of each NCSE Level 3 School Support Plus pupils 5 and NCSE Level 2 School Support pupils 7. And they were also made aware of a total of 28 pupils in this one school who are in a continuum requiring additional sports support in the school. Now, the principal said, this further highlights the challenges we face in delivering genuine and meaningful support to the children with highest care needs. It's also important to note that each child on the top level of SNA is in a separate and different classroom. This makes it impossible for one SNA to cover two pupils. So that's the principle there, A, making the argument, but B, pointing out very clearly that the reduction means that even those at the top level, it's impossible to cover them. And then, of course, you've got 7 additional pupils and a further 28 pupils. So that's an awful lot of children and their families who are going to miss out. I'll come back to you, Ali, in a moment, because, again, the political perspective is important, the school perspective is important, the parents' perspective is important. Janice, thank you for joining me in relation to this. Your children are at St. Oran's National School in Coghill. What's your reaction to this news?
Absolutely shocked, Greg, to be honest with you. You know, the role of a special needs assistant is fundamental to education and well-being of children with additional needs. Now, it's not only affecting the children with additional needs, it's going to affect the children in every single class and every single school nationwide. Because if an FNA is pulled and there's a child in that classroom that needs an FNA, the teacher is then going to have to directly deal with the child if they need, you know, emotional support and stuff. What happens to the rest of the children then in that school? So I'm not only just fighting this for my own child and for the SNAs who have trained and become qualified and are absolutely fantastic at their jobs. You know, I'm fighting for everybody, for the children with additional needs, for the SNAs, and the teachers need to be back as well. They need to be supporting this.
You make a very good point, because it is not just about the child that might need additional attention. It does end up affecting the entire classroom. For context, there are 30 students in your child's class at the moment, in Amelia's class, and one SNA for that entire class. So now they're effectively going to have to stretch this 0.5 SNA stuff. But anyway, they're actually going to now have to stretch 2.5 SNAs across a number of classes.
Across a number of the figures that you stated, 28 children. Yeah. Now, my daughter is in one of the highest tiers, so she has been awarded an SNA full time. That SNA could then be called from Amelia to another child in another classroom that may need assistance, which is absolutely fine. That's totally understandable. But then my daughter is missing out. Well, that SNA is gone for 10 minutes or an hour. You know, it's very unfair. But then, you know, this I'm not sure if I'm getting this right, this NCSE crowd are saying then that the SNA has been allocated to the school. Well, if our children with additional needs weren't in the schools, then the SNA wouldn't be there in the first place.
Another parent, Fiona, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
All right. When did you hear this news? What do you believe the impact will be?
I heard the news from the principal just yesterday. I first just want to say that this is no reflection on the school. The school is absolutely amazing, from all the staff, from the receptionist up to the teachers, the principals, the SNAs. They have been amazing from when she was first diagnosed. The whole school got trained up. They are just fantastic. I just can't praise them enough. But this is just... It is devastating. It does have a major impact on not just Shifra, but a lot of other children. It is like they're giving us I only have the option of either my child gets an education or I have to keep her at home to keep her alive. It is that serious. Like, Shifra is a type 1 diabetic. Mm. She's extremely unstable. And like, the definition of a type 1 diabetic is a chronic life-threatening disease that I know many adults struggle to maintain. I don't know how they think that a 7-year-old child is to maintain this on her own during school. It isn't feasible. It isn't. It is a life or death situation. So I'm going to have to choose between, do I send my child to school or do I want to keep my child alive? Because I'm essentially, when I bring my child to school, I'm giving her over her life over to the SNAs, and they are amazing and they do an amazing job. But she is only 7. She's only a child. She needs to be kept a child. And, you know, with her age, she does not have the complete awareness of the importance of the management of her diabetes. And she shouldn't, because she is only a child. Every child deserves an education. Every single child, regardless of their needs. And their needs need to be met in school. And I just think this is a disgrace. We need to fight.
It puts you in a very difficult position. Sorry. It puts the school in a very difficult position. It makes you have to make very, very choices, really, that you actually can't get right. You know, you're left in a situation whereby both choices potentially could be wrong. You're quite right. The school is doing everything they can. But this seems to be all off the back of one visit by one person who we won't name just at this time. And also, I just want to put this into a little bit of context, because there was much clapping at the budget for 2026. The government announced the budget provided for 1,717 additional SNA posts. The recruitment drive is expected to bring the total number of SNAs in Ireland to nearly 25,000 by the end of this year. These positions are being allocated across primary, post-primary, and special schools. 700 of these new SNAs are specifically earmarked for mainstream schools to support the government's own inclusion education policy. Now, in that context, Councillor Ali Farron, how could these positions be cut when the budget makes specific reference to the funding of new places, not just generally speaking, but actually for mainstream schools? Yet here we are in Donegal, in North Donegal, and a school that's made a very strong argument for the retention of its SNAs, and perhaps even the expansion of its SNAs, is having them cut. How does that all make sense?
It actually beggars belief, but it's something that we've got used to. You get announcements from Dublin, and then you don't get the programme does not be completed on the ground. So, like, we're here today talking about Buncrana. This is an issue that, from what I'm gathering, is going to be affecting all of Donegal and a lot more.
Okay, well, just in relation to that, and sorry to cut across you, if there are any people associated with schools anywhere across the region, or principals, in fact, that have had SNA cuts despite very strong... because what we need to find out here is a person or persons responsible going into schools, are they being told we need to trim the fat? A horrible thing to say, but are they making assessments based on a school's need, or are they also perhaps enforcing a reduction in SNAs across the board? We need to get to the bottom of that, I think, Ali.
Well, I think they are. I don't think it's down to the person on the ground here in Donegal. I think it's a remit they're getting from Dublin, and I think that's what's galling. You know, they do have the announcements of that they're going to have X number extra SNAs in our schools. Yet here's an example of them cutting them. And remember, these SNAs are every bit as important as a teacher in these schools. Yet they're probably the only sector within that education that doesn't have a contract. Like, they can be let go when there's a student leaves. So this is a major issue for the principal in that school that we're talking about. But many other schools that they're very, very worried about losing their... And I do think it's a Dublin... It's our general... Our government in Dublin that's responsible for this. And that's what's worrying about it, because they genuinely have no apathy for the people in this neck of the woods or in the rural school.
And Fiona, here we go again. I'm sure you're a very busy parent. I'm sure you've got an awful lot on your plate, as is... And here we are in a situation where you're being railroaded effectively into becoming a campaigner.
Yeah, yes. Like, I feel like they don't have enough awareness around type 1 diabetes, and they don't realise, like, it is, as I said, a chronic life-threatening disease. It is 24/7, 365 days a year. It does no time off. So I feel like to remove that from school is... To make Shifra, a 7-year-old child, take her own responsibility for her diabetes is just, it's unfathomable. I just can't believe that they're doing it, and that we as a parent have to advocate now for our child to get what is an essential need and what is her right to education. It's just, it really is crazy that we have to do this.
Yeah, and Janice, I could say the same for you, you know, having to become an advocate for common sense, it would seem.
It definitely is. You know, I've advocated for Amelia from day one. There's so many medical and complex issues there. And, you know, the closest child to any family, Greg, or the closest person to any child is a family. Mm-hmm. The next person in that line is an SNA. And I'm going to use her SNA's name. It's Bernie. She's absolutely fantastic. She's not aware that she's become part of her family. In the background, she's always there. She supports Amelia. She supports us as a family, supports me as a mother. She knows my child nearly as well as what I do, sometimes better, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a vital part of the whole community. It's true what they say, it takes a village to raise a child. And they're trying to take that village away from us. And as a parent with a child with additional needs, it feels like they're trying to push them into a unit, cut them off from society. Mm. Whereas
they need to be in a mainstream school. They're, they should be treated fairly and equally. You know, there should be no difference made
but
in any case.
This aligns with the government's own inclusion education policy. This is going, seemingly going against that policy, because as you say, you know, do people need to look at alternatives that don't align with that? Janice, thank you so very much indeed. Fiona, we're not going to just let this go today, by the way. It's not a one-and-done situation, because these are the type of issues that we need to get to the bottom of. But thanks for kicking it off for us, Fiona and Janice and Ali. As I say, you know, often it's the mums become accidental protesters, you know, because the advocacy for a child with additional needs begins very, very early. It begins very early, where you're constantly battling for an appointment here, an appointment there, a diagnosis here, a diagnosis there. And you think maybe, you know, in a tough situation, you've got the back broke of it. The school's set up well. You've got a good principal, a great SNA, a great principal. And then someone comes in and rips the rug from under you. And that's what it feels like, because you've got a mom there who effectively is going to have to make a decision. Do you send your school, your seven-year-old to school and let them look after their own health, or do you keep them at home?
But Greg, this is every local school that I know of has SNAs, and they're not there just to sweep the floor. They're there because they're needed. They're there to deliver, as them women were telling you, like, much needed service. And if it wasn't there, they would be not going to mainstream schools. Then we'd have to put on extra buses to bus them to wherever these special schools are, maybe in Letterkenny. So, you know, there's no joined up thinking, which we've learned, we've come to expect. And like our grouping, we've been getting a lot of emails about this from parents, and it affects every one of us in this community, in my opinion. And
I will say, your party is well organised on the ground. You also have a TD. So I presume Deputy Ward's going to be raising this directly with the Education Minister or the Education Minister, or whoever is responsible.
I have assurances that he'll be bringing it up in the Dáil next week, high on his priority. So we will have to wait and see if he gets the speaking time. But to do that, he's doing his best, and he'll not be left wanting in this relation, because it's something very, very close to his heart as well. It's something he's, before he became a TD, his wife is very, very involved and been an SNA as well. So it's something we know all about, and we will be doing our best to fight for it.
Listen, thank you very much for your time, you. Councillor Ali Farron there. Now, again, I want to put it out, if any other schools out there who have, you know, sometimes the makeup of the school might change. So, you know, people go through the school system onto secondary or whatever might happen, and an SNA will be reviewed and the number aren't needed, and another school might have a greater need for them. That's okay too. But I do want to get a sense of, are there other schools out there that have made a very clear argument, as the school we've been talking about has, for the need for the amount of SNAs that they have? Have they had them cut? So get in touch with us here. Ireland's draw against Israel in the UEFA Nations League was described as an absolute nightmare from both a security and political perspective. The FAI a few months ago voted for a UEFA ban of Israel, but we were drawn with them. Senior Gardaí warning that a match in Dublin will be a policing nightmare. Councillor Jack Murray joins us on the programme now. You're a regular attendee at international matches, I believe, Jack.
Yeah, look, a lifelong supporter of the Irish international team. I've gone to home games since I was 3 years old, and I've followed them to every corner of Europe. I love the national team, but I just think this is one that we just cannot facilitate. We cannot see the normalisation or the sports washing of a genocidal state and a visit to Dublin of that state, the Israeli flag being hoisted in Dublin, the Israeli national anthem being belted out in our capital city, while crimes against humanity persist and continue, while men, women and children continue to be slaughtered on a daily basis in Gaza and the West Bank. And it's just a step too far. And look, I'm very proud of the FAI for the stance they made, the overwhelming vote of its members to call on the UEFA to expel Israel. And I think those same grounds for that argument should apply, and we should just not facilitate this game going ahead in our capital city.
well, up to and including pulling out of the competition?
If necessary. And look, that's not what no Ireland fan wants to see. I want to see Ireland excel in every sporting competition. I want to travel. I want to go to home games and enjoy it. But there's sometimes when you have to stick by your values, even if it is painful.
Well, with that in mind, do we get our basketball teams, our Donegal athletes, do they all pull out of any games or events where Israeli athletes are taking part in? And I'm not, this is not trying to catch anyone out here, right? But, you know, when you take a stance, there are ramifications. So, say, for instance, Mark English is running in an 800 metres final and there is an Israeli in the eighth lane. Are you saying he has to pull out as well? Like, where does it end? It can't just be football if this is the principled stand.
Yeah, no, I don't want to get in a ranking list of what you should do and what you can't do. This is they're visiting Dublin. That's a key part of it. They're representing the state, whether it's an individual athlete or a team representing the nation, with the flag and all the pomp that comes with it. And look, this isn't an obscure idea. There's precedent for this. After Russia illegally invaded Ukraine, Poland refused to play them. The Czech Republic refused to play them. Sweden refused to play them. And FIFA acted, and they kicked Russia out of FIFA.
That's not going to happen, though, because Israel are too politically influential for that. They're the good guys. Russia are the bad guys.
Yeah, but whether it can or cannot, we have values in Ireland. The Irish people clearly stand against the apartheid regime that's in Israel. We did the same during the South African apartheid regime. And look, South Africa is a good example too, because they were completely ostracised for about 30 years during the apartheid regime, and it had an impact. And look, there's teams in that group. The likes of Kosovo are in our same group. There's huge sentiment and support or in the opposition to the genocide that's happening in Gaza and Kosovo. They may or may not follow our lead. That could have ramifications. We saw the Eurovision, where Ireland were the first country to say they wouldn't participate because Israel were participating. We were followed then by Spain, by Slovenia, by Iceland. And look, that made headlines around the world. It made a huge impact. I was actually at a meeting in Denmark on the Committee of the Regions when news had just broke that Ireland were to be the first country to boycott the Eurovision. And there's people around that table. There was Belgians, French people, Finnish people, and they were nearly punching the air, like slapping me on the back as an Irish person, saying thank you for your country making such a principled stand. And like, soccer is a much, much bigger thing than the Eurovision. It would have ramifications around the world. It would be seen on television screens around the world. And I would say that the Irish people, as a principled people, are not going to normalise the Israeli state. We're not going to facilitate the sports washing of a genocidal state on Irish soil, and we are going to make a stand. And as I said, look, I think it was 92% of the delegates at the FAI voted for the expulsion of Israel out of UEFA. I think it's a natural outworking of that. Clearly the sentiment of the footballing community in Ireland would agree with us. So I think the FAI leadership needs to heed that call, and we need to make a stand.
So what other countries do we not play against? Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Afghanistan. Where does it end?
And that's a spiraling.
Belarus, do we play against? Because the question's tough, Jack. You can't isolate the point that you want to make.
No. Of course, and I don't mind the question, but we need to recognise we're not the United Nations, so we can't start intervening on every international issue.
So why this one, then?
This is the country. But because they are drawn against us to play against us in our capital city.
What if the home game is played in a neutral country?
This is still us normalising. Should we play them, then we are normalising the Israeli state. We are acting like there's nothing to see here, like this is a perfectly normal country, that they haven't killed almost 100,000 civilians.
What are then about proxy states like the United States, who the very bombs that you are talking of that obliterated an entire generation were manufactured and in some cases signed by the US, US senators, etc. Guilty by association, it couldn't be a greater example of that. What do we do about the US then?
we have to stand up to America. I'm not going to say that America are innocent, but look, last year my own party refused to go to the White House for that very reason, because the Americans are providing the weapons that they're slaughtering Palestinians.
So are you boycotting McDonald's, for an example? Would you go into McDonald's, or would you go into Costa Coffee?
I do, yeah.
What about the locals? What about the local staff that's been supported there? So as an elected rep, right?
That's a fair question. But I say, if you hold values, then I think they're values you have to act upon. And we could have been having this exact same argument when the Dunstores ladies refused to handle South African watermelons. Obviously, you could have said that, is that not inflicting on Dunstores, an Irish company? But it had ramifications worldwide, and was often cited as one of the key measures.
I'm not saying you're wrong, by the way. I'm not saying you're wrong. It's just I see an awful lot of a la carte advocacism. You know what I mean? I see a lot of people who will park their opinions for a while because there's a wedding on in San Francisco. Right, so next thing you know, they're disengaging. Like, say, for instance, do you have any intention to travel to the United States in the near future? And if so, would you set your social media to private to ensure that you get in?
Look, I would have no problem in traveling to the United States. Look, I'm saying that I've traveled to Israel and I've traveled to refugee camps.
No, but I'm not about America specifically. Like, are you scheduled to go over for St. Patrick's Day, for example?
I'm not, no. Right. But I have no problem in setting foot in America.
But I'm just trying to get to the point. For the next time you're going to America, what are you going to do about what are you going to do about your social media? Because you get flagged by that. Would you put it to private or what?
No, what I've put on social media is there for the world to see, and I'm very proud of everything I put on. I wouldn't hide it for anybody.
No, that's okay. Jack, by the way, I'm not exactly, and it's clear you're very principled. I'm not trying to say your argument is wrong. I'm just trying to get into the nuances of it. And you've answered every question I've asked of you, and I think you understand. I'm not here trying to say Ireland should play Israel in Dublin, not for a second. If we forfeit the game, I think it's an automatic 3-0 loss, and we risk being chucked out of the competition. But if everyone in our group did the same thing, well, then maybe something could be achieved in that regard. What happened... what continues to happen in Gaza is a genocide, and it's absolutely horrendous what's going on there. And we've been left in a very tricky situation, politically and policing.
I'm happy to be probed on it, and no, you're right to do so. But I think what's happened in Gaza and the West Bank is the worst crimes against humanity that I've witnessed in my lifetime, certainly in this the turn of the century. Nothing compares.
It's horrendous. And the fact that we've seen it as well, you know, like in the 40s, there might have been reports. We're seeing it live, and we're hearing from the people that are affected. Jack, thank you very much for your time. Shannon Wilkins is in with us because on a Friday, as went mostly, and we're going to be more specific about this going forward, we do a quick social media run around. Isn't that right, Shannon, I'm told?
Yes, Greg.
He certainly was on the running order. Right, let's start with three things. And we'll start with stuff that's on the telly bobs, right? So there's a local interest in how to get to heaven.
From Belfast.
Okay, what's this about?
So it's a group of three friends, and their best friend from childhood is tragically murdered.
Okay, I like the inverted commas. What does that mean? Maybe they're not?
Well, we have to find out and see. At the moment, apparently she fell down the stairs, but the girls are suspicious. One of the friends accidentally opens the coffin, and they've all got little matching tattoos of Celtic symbol.
Yes.
And there's no tattoo in the coffin, so she knows it's not her. So this is the first episode I've seen, so I'm going to find out.
Did it catch you?
I think what really piqued my interest is I love anything Irish. Anything Irish made, you kind of relate a bit more. Do you know?
Okay. Steal from Amazon. Steal on Amazon's a great wee show. It's only 6 episodes. I really enjoyed it if you're looking for something for the weekend. Right, so that's How to Get to Heaven from Belfast. The Lucy Letby documentary on Netflix. Did you watch this?
I haven't even watched it yet, but me and you were chatting about this a bit earlier on.
Yeah, the Lucy Letby story is an interesting one. The evidence against her is incredibly circumstantial, and also there is suggestions that maybe there are others that were responsible and she was the fall guy for it. I think they definitely need to have another look at this case. I'm not going to wear a Lucy Letby's innocent t-shirt, don't get me wrong, but there's certainly enough in it, and it's highlighted in this documentary. And if you've seen a previous documentary that was made, it's very similar, but I think there's enough in it, and it's being reviewed at the moment, where I think this case needs to be looked at, because fundamentally she was convicted on evidence from a professional who misinterpreted a report from another doctor who said, excuse me, you've got this wrong, blah, 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 blah. So the Lucy Letby is, it's an interesting one. Funny is, though, Shannon, after I watched it, a lot of people believe it reaffirmed her guilt. Others believed that it's left enough questions open. It's a decent watch. It's very, very difficult because it involves the loss of babies, and it's entertainment. It's a documentary. I would recommend you watch it. These Sacred Vows, what's this on?
This is on RTE and you can get it on the player, so it's on a Sunday night. I thought last week I would have got a third episode because I watched the two episodes on the player and I didn't, and it actually ruined my whole week. Because you know when you get like addicted to something?
I know, yeah. It's a must watch.
So now this Sunday I'll be on episode 3 and I'm very excited.
Brilliant. On social media, everybody's AI in themselves. You did one of me, I think, and Donegal's got two Letterkennies. One of the Letterkennies actually is in Carrick and Shannon. And anyway, it's AI. It's not supposed to be accurate, but it's really caricature stuff. It's all over the place. Probably already so popular that it's a bit cringe.
It's a bit cringe, but I'm not going to lie. I spent my Saturday night just playing with it, like even photos of my dog. So I did a realistic one and then I did a fake one.
Did you include your hands?
I don't know where my hands in it, actually.
It'd be interesting to see what the caricature might do with them.
Yeah, I didn't really notice them, but it made my hair blonder.
Okay, I'm going to get a live look at that now. So that's the AI yourself. Everyone's doing it with ChatGPT. Donegal Tuesday was last Tuesday in Galway. It passed off without great incident. Where did you went to college in Dublin,
I went to Dublin.
So Donegal Tuesday is a Galway thing.
It's a Galway thing. Nationally now, they kind of do more of a Jersey night. Ooh. So it's more, inclusive for all the counties. But people are saying that they really have to preserve the Donegal Tuesday. It's dying out. People are into their acai bowls and the coffees now. So if anybody wants to head up to Galway on a Tuesday for Donegal Tuesday.
It was last Tuesday.
It was last Tuesday, yeah, okay. But don't they do it regularly? Like it used to be weekly.
Acca bowls.
Acai bowls.
Yes.
Aye, that's the same thing.
Is that like frozen stuff with fruit?
Yeah, fruit and
yeah,
nuts.
A lot of the small coffee docks are doing these. Incredibly popular. Why is it written down on my sheet?
Donegal Tuesdays and acai bowls. That's the quote that I took away from it. People don't care about Donegal Tuesdays
anymore. Oh, I get
anymore.
You. They're more
acai bowls.
Okay. And Sephora comes to Ireland in about 10 seconds.
This has been all over my For You page. All the influencers.
You know what's been all over mine.
And everyone's so excited. So you've got your Rode Cosmetics, Kylie Jenner Cosmetics. Everything that people used to fly to America for is now available in Belfast. So if anybody has a free weekend, maybe take a wee run up. All the wee girls in your life will probably love it. Or your wife or your girlfriend.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant stuff. Shannon Wilkins will be back next Friday. Have a fantastic week, everyone. We really appreciate your support throughout the last week. We're going to be back with you bright, fresh, on Monday morning at 9 o'clock.